It is Thursday. No, it's not Thursday. It's Tuesday, August 1st. You're listening to The Christian Commute. I'm on the way home, leaving work a little earlier than I would on any other day, but it's my mom's birthday. So I am going to go home. Or actually, I'm going to go to their house to celebrate my mom's birthday. I think she's 70 now, either 69 or 70. My mom is old. And retired, and a happy grandmom. But I have another, I don't know, how old am I, 30? I've got another 30 years in the workforce. So you can enjoy another 30 years of Christian commutes. Guys, can you imagine where we'll be on the Christian commute in 20 years? It'll probably be live via some kind of satellite internet connection where you can watch it and download it and listen to it. See, you know, the Florida cars in front of me going slow. I don't know what kind of technology will allow me to podcast 20 years from now and what kind of improvements there will be. But I do know this. There will be people from Florida in front of me going too slow because some things never change. It's been that way my whole life. They could buy those Tesla self-driving cars, and the car would know it's from Florida, and it would drive slow. I have a full show for you today. Today's show topic is called Youth Ministry Culture and the World. Youth Ministry Culture in the World. You guys know what I think about youth ministry culture. And I've got a question in the inbox, but first we're going to go through 2 Corinthians 13 verses 9 through 10. I think tomorrow will be our last day in 2 Corinthians, and then we will move on to Galatians. After that, provided I remember to go to my New Testament survey book and read up on the origin and context of Galatians, when it was written. I know the occasion for writing Galatians. It's to combat the Judaizers, but I can't remember the dates. Uh-oh, here comes a truck. Better slow down. Oh, it's so hard to get on the exit here and not get run over by tractor trailers. Okay. 2 Corinthians chapter 13 verses 9 through 10. 2 Corinthians chapter 13 verses 9 through 10. Paul rejoices in the strength of the Corinthians. And he doesn't care if he seems weak, but he wants them to be strong because he desires that they will be restored. He's not writing them to correct their sin so that he can go discipline them and deal harshly with them. He doesn't want to do that. He wants them to be fully restored. He wants them to be in a position of strength. He wants them to be in the right standing before the Lord and before him who judges with the authority of the Lord, or maybe disciplines with the authority of the Lord in a temporal setting. You think of it like this. Whose parents among you, listeners, or those of you who are parents, like to whip your kids? Like, you better be behaving when I get home, or I'm going to whip you. And you secretly hope, yeah, I hope they're misbehaving so I can whip them. Parents don't think that way. Parents don't like to whip their kids. They would rather their kids behave all the time. But when they don't, they have to exercise harsh authority. But it's not like that's what they want to do. It's not their goal. It's just a necessary part of discipline, sometimes unpleasant one. Anybody who likes to whip their kids is some kind of masochist or something. Masochistic, is that what that is? Just awful. Belongs in a mental institution. I don't like to whip my kids. I don't like to spank them when they do something wrong. I'd rather them just behave. And I think that's the mindset Paul has here. I hope you guys are fully restored. I hope you're strong. He doesn't want to rebuke them when he comes. He says he writes the way he does. He writes these strong letters when he's absent, so that he doesn't have to be harsh when he comes. Harsh and exercising the authority that the Lord gave him. But understand, the authority that the Lord gave Paul is not to tear down the Corinthians, or for that matter, any other church. It's not to tear it down, but to build it up. I'm going to make a modern scientific example that I doubt Paul was thinking about, just as a mental exercise. Think about working out with weights. I haven't done that in a long time, since I took weight training in high school. But if anybody's ever worked out with weights before, when you first start working out with weights, the next two or three days, I don't care if you stretch or not, you're going to be sorer than you ever have in your entire life. And you're going to hurt. But after you work out with weights for a long time, you get used to it and you're going to be stronger. You break yourself down and get stronger. That's how it works. And that's kind of the same thing Paul's doing here. He's going to exercise his authority, but it's not to tear the church down, even if temporarily they feel a little beat up. No, it's to make them stronger. It's to edify them. Because when you're outside of God's will, and then you're disciplined and get back in God's will, even though the discipline process is painful, ultimately, you're better because you're not under the chastisement of the Lord. So Paul, though he may sound harsh in his letters, wholly wants to edify the church and to build it back up. And that's what he's going to do when he comes, is exercise his authority to do so as Christ's apostle. And with that, we'll end the Bible chapter review and we'll go to the inbox. Do you need theological roadside assistance? Do you have a question about theology or apologetics? Do you have a show topic suggestion? Send it to SethDunn88@gmail.com. SethDunn88@gmail.com. That is the Christian Commute inbox. And I have a new question in today from Elsie. And in keeping with my new scheme of giving people experience points, I'm going to declare that Elsie is a Sapphire level Christian Commute listener, because she writes in so much. And she's going to get 97 experience points for this. So Sapphire level. Congratulations, Elsie. You can put that on your email signature from now on. Elsie from Pennsylvania, comma, Sapphire level Christian Commute listener. And if anybody else writes in, I'll make up a new thing. So Elsie writes in from Pennsylvania to ask if my wife gives me grief about visiting churches. Not really. And I don't really visit a lot of churches, quite frankly. I can remember being in my church evangelism class, and was it church evangelism or church ministry? I never can remember. I was in Marietta. Dr. Farmer was the professor. And one of the things we were talking about in this class was the importance of how you present your church when visitors come. And you don't want it to be dirty, because that might be the first time anybody's ever visited your church, and they might never come back if your nursery is dirty or something like that, or if you have a sketchy parking lot. Like, these things matter. And as an exercise, the class was, you know, asked to think of things that you've noticed when you visited a church that were off-putting. And I was hard-pressed to think of one, because I think at this time, I want to say I was 25 years old. I couldn't think of 10 churches that I'd visited, because I grew up going to Woodland Park Baptist in Chattanooga, and I went there every Sunday. And I did vacation Bible school at other churches in the area, like Oakwood Baptist or Bayside Baptist. But mainly, I always went to Woodland Park on Sunday morning, every Sunday. And I'd never been to another church on Sunday morning until one day my parents went away somewhere. They left my brother in charge. I don't know. I was 8 or 9, and he would have been in 20 or 19. And we lived in Harrison, Tennessee, and Woodland Park was in Brainerd, which isn't a long way. It's like 10 or 15 minutes tops. But for whatever reason, I guess about thinking back, I wonder if my brother liked a girl who was at this church. I have no idea why he chose to get us up and go to a different church. But we went to Harrison United Methodist near our house. And his best friend, Joe Boshears, was also with us. Joe Boshears eventually went to Methodist Seminary. I have no idea why we went there. And then I went to visit Joe one weekend while he was at Emory, that's Candler Theological Seminary in Atlanta. And I went to the Emory Chapel service on Sunday with him. And I was 15. And that was as many churches as I'd ever visited. One United Methodist Church, and not even really a church, chapel at Emory. And then when I went to college in Athens, I visited my wife's church, or her mom's church, where her family went, which is Colbert First Baptist. And I would go there if I would spend Saturday night at her parents' house. I would go there in the morning with them. And then one Easter, my wife and I went to Bellhaven Baptist Church. I don't know why we went there instead of Colbert. I can't remember. But that was the extent of the churches I had visited. And in high school, when we moved to Cartersville, my parents went to Tabernacle, but I didn't like it when I was a youth. So I went to First Baptist because that's where all my friends were. And I just hadn't visited a lot of churches. So there I was, I guess 25 years old at the time, and I hadn't been to 10 different churches. So I don't visit churches a lot, Elsie. I guess you were listening to the show when I was talking about searching for a new church after leaving mine because of the Roman Catholic. I don't think my wife went to any but my current church with me because the kids were sick or she was sick, just how timing was. And since we've joined my church, I haven't visited another church in town except for the PCA church. And we went there last week because we were having some guest preacher at my church, and I didn't want to hear him. I was like, I don't care about what he's talking about. I don't want to go there. So we went to the PCA church. And my wife, Elsie, actually did give me grief about it. She said she didn't want to go because it was boring. And I said, that's what I like about it. It's good to be boring. So it's, imagine the Frozen and Chosen Presbyterian Church, where you go, the preacher reads a scripture, the preacher prays, you make a corporate confession of sin, you sing two songs, you sit down, they take the offering, he gives a sermon, then he gives a benediction, then you sing the doxology, and you leave, and that's what they do every week, and it's awesome. No one raises their hand in their ear for any reason. And it's the nice, Frozen and Chosen Presbyterian Church, and I like that. But my wife thought it was boring. But that's as much grief as she gave me. She was like, can't we just go to Tabernacle? And I was like, no, I want to go over here to Jody's church. I like that it's boring. But I just don't visit a whole lot of churches, Elsie, outside of, you know, when I was searching for a new one. And even then, I relied on sermon media. So My wife will speak her mind if there's something about a church that she has reservations about, and I'll listen to her. But ultimately, she respects my leadership of the household, and she's going to go where I say we're going to go. But 50 out of 52 times, if we're in town, we're going to go to my church. And you know how picky I am. I mean, I'm picky about churches. You guys hear this show. I mean, somehow my church made the cut of my pickiness. And I'm even picky about my church. I'm very picky about how that is. So I don't know what the mindset of the person is who likes to visit different churches here and there. I really don't like to do that. You go and you're a part of a church, and that's where you go. And maybe it's just my personality. I like a nice routine. I like sameness. I like to be the same place every Sunday. I don't like change. Maybe that's part of it. But, I mean, we're in covenant fellowship with the members of my church. Unless I'm out of town, why would I visit another church? Well, I told you. Well, I didn't want to hear some... I'm at the point in my life where if I think I'm not going to... I don't want to say get anything or enjoy the sermon by some guest preacher. I'm just not going to go. I usually don't like what the guest preacher has to say. It's usually some story about himself, and I don't want to go sit there for 30 minutes and be ticked off that I have to listen to it. So I just do everybody a favor, and I just go somewhere else that week. So usually when there's a guest preacher somewhere, I'll just go to some place that's not having a special event. I just don't like them. But other than that, I go to my church, because that's my church and that's where I'm going to go. That's where I belong. Some people visit around churches. I don't know why they do that. If you're at your church and you're a member of that church, why would you go somewhere else? On a regular basis, why would you go somewhere else? So I will probably go to that Presbyterian church 4 times a year. The pastor's a buddy of mine. And I like the Frozen and Chosen services. Thank God, when I've gone there, I've never had to witness the sprinkling of a baby that the Presbyterians think is baptism. But I'm not a Presbyterian. I'm a Baptist through and through. So I like to go to my Baptist church. And if my wife doesn't like where we're going to church at any given time, I respect her opinion on it. I want to hear what she has to say. But she is a good submissive wife, and she will submit to my leadership on where we go to church. And hey, is my record that good on where I've led us, Elsie? No, it's not. She didn't like where we went to church at Expedition. She could not stand the services. Could not stand the music, and didn't like the sermons. And we probably hung on there a little too long, and it took the Roman Catholic and the Star Wars clip to put us over the top. Before that, First Baptist Church of Woodstock, we both liked it there, but that turned out to be the wrong move. I mean, it just got too corporate and too mega there. Not a good place, but live and learn by experience. Makes me appreciate my youth growing up at Woodland Park. Really good church, really good people, really good sermons, really good preacher, going to the same place every week. But my wife does what a good wife does, because it's what a Christian wife does, and she follows me, and doesn't really give me a lot of grief, but she will give me her opinion. And when you're a wife, women who are listening, you can give your husband your opinion and your analysis without giving him grief. And here's the difference. Giving your analysis once or twice with a supporting detail, letting him consider it, and then dropping it. And then if you bring it up over and over, what about this? What about this? What about this? Well, now you're giving him grief and you're being a nag and a constant drip. So don't do that. So Elsie, if I may, I'm going to parlay your specific question about visiting churches, which I don't do terribly often. I'm going to parlay that to a general question. Wives, to be a good helpmate for your husband, tell him what you think. Tell him what's on your mind. Tell him what you notice. My wife, as it turns out, is a pretty discerning person. So tell him what you notice about anything, not just where you're at in church, just jobs, people you meet. Be completely honest and open and tell him your worries and fears and tell him what you like. But when he's heard it and he's heard your reasoning and you've had a couple of conversations about it and he's not going to go in the direction that you think that the family should go, then it's time to drop it and don't give him grief. So that's the fine line between being a helpmate and a nagging constant drip. Now let's move on to the show topic suggestion. Elsie, thank you for another good question in the inbox. You guys who have questions out there, keep writing them in. But let's move on to the show topic, youth ministry culture and the world. I am predicting a problem in the next few years with youth ministry culture. Because my sense of youth ministry culture, it's kind of like seeker sensitivity, it's kind of like revivalism, and it's more about get them in than it is about teaching and discipleship. It's more about get them in, get them saved. Get them to make a profession. And let's do something fun. As the culture becomes more worldly and less Christian, it's going to be more difficult to be attractionally seeker sensitive to youth. So let's think about the United States, because I don't know what goes on anywhere else. I'm from the United States. And whether you like this term or not, the United States has tended to be, at least nominally, a quote-unquote Christian country. When my mom, who's 70 years old today, when my mom was in school, they did prayer in school and they read from the Bible. Now, they haven't done that since the 60s or 70s or whenever. But there was a largely Judeo-Christian ethic in the United States as far as... my father-in-law told me this the other day. I don't know how it came up, but he was talking about when he was my age, if there was a guy dating a woman, people in their 20s, and the woman was the kind of woman who would let her boyfriend fool around with her. This is my father-in-law telling me this. It's one of those conversations, your older relative starts talking, you're like, what are you, what? Don't, what? And he says, if you're lucky enough to meet a girl who will fool around with you before you're married. That was his words. My father-in-law is not a Christian. He's lost. But he is nominally a Christian. He grew up in a Christian home. He's been baptized. So he's one of these people like I talk about in the baby boomer generation who are Christianized but not Christian. And he said, if you were lucky enough to date a girl who would let you fool around with her before you were married, if you got her pregnant, you married her. So there's this idea in the society that you shouldn't fool around before marriage, and if you did, well, you got married. And you stuck out your marriage. But you call it feminism, call it secularism, whatever you want to call it, the morality of society as far as mores has visibly eroded. It's gone from being nominally Christian to post-Christian. All right. So 30 years ago, 20 years ago, heck, when I was little, or when I was in high school, you just didn't sleep around with girls or go out drinking and let parents know about it. Like they'd be okay with it. Now, I didn't do those things because I'm a fundy through and through. But when I was in high school and the kids wanted to throw a party with a keg or something, it's not like they just opened up their mom and dad's house and did it. It's not like they just slept with their girlfriend and their mom and dad knew about it. You hid those things from your mom and dad because the standard of society was, that's wrong, you'll get in trouble for doing that. But now, that's less and less of a big deal. There'll be teenagers who just openly let their parents know they're going out drinking. Or teenagers in a relationship having sexual intercourse with one another, not keeping a secret from their parents. Some of them might even be doing it in their parents' house, you know, in the other side of the house. And, you know, they're not trying, by the way, they've always done this. Don't get me wrong by saying, you know, they're not doing this. But what I mean is, they're not trying to hide it. You know, they're not sneaking out at night or not saying, oh yeah, we're watching a movie in here. They're not even pretending. It's, culture is moving, all right? The expectation of what's okay in a culture. What does this have to do with youth ministry? Well, youth ministry and any form of seeker sensitivity, it generally tries to look like the world. Well, when the world looks more like the church because of nominal cultural Christianity, you're not going to run into a whole lot of problems. So if you want to have a youth Bible study, and you have the expectation that you kids are not going to go sneak out to the porch and make out at youth Bible study, 10 years ago, 20 years ago, that's a reasonable expectation. Is it a reasonable expectation now? Youth ministry could be, we're going to do rafting trips and ski trips. Think about these overnight trips. I went on a overnight ski trip with Tabernacle when I was young. We went to, it was West Virginia, Winter Place, West Virginia. And I was staying in the same room as the pastor's son and some of his friends. Dewey Davidson was the pastor. His son's name was Justin. And Justin's friends weren't real churchy people. It's kind of funny. They were kind of wild kids then, but when I think of them now, they're all quite churchy. And Christian. But some of those kids got into the mini bar of the room and got in trouble. And that was something to get you in trouble. Like, it's not cool to get in the mini bar on the Baptist youth ski trip. That's bad. But as culture moves, and it's just okay for teenagers to drink, okay for teenagers to sleep around, how do churches who are trying to be attractional to youth, how are they going to get by? Because you used to could say, you have a certain expectation. If you're going to come to this church lock-in or this church ski trip, you're going to act like this, you're going to act a certain way. And if you don't act this way, you'll get in trouble and you'll be asked to leave. And kids knew that, and they wouldn't think to act like that. Well, it's wrong to have sex before marriage, so I'm not going to try and fool around with my girlfriend at the church lock-in. But now the idea that it's wrong to have sex before marriage, or it's wrong to get drunk, or it's wrong to be homosexual, you name it, whatever social moray it is, it's lightened, and you have these kids coming in, these nominally Christian kids or even non-Christian kids who are part of a nominally Christian culture. The culture is not nominally Christian anymore. So where does that leave churches whose ministry model to the youth is to be attractional? Well, come in here and play video games. What you'll find, especially if you go to mega churches and the big youth buildings they build, is they'll have like little areas for video games, like little closed off areas for video games. Well, what kind of video games are you going to play there? Are you going to play Mario Kart, or are you going to play something more adult, like Grand Theft Auto or some, you know, very bloody, gory, or crime centered game. Used to be, well, you can't do that thing at church. But now, the expectation of these kids, it's always been, entertain me, right? The expectation of kids in the seeker-sensitive ministry and this youth movement has been, entertain me. You know, play me a hip song. I want to play video games. You know, keep me excited. You know, don't beat me up about morality. And yeah, you can tell me about Jesus at the end. That's the idea. But what's the culture of entertainment like? One thing I see on, just on the websites, just if you just go on Yahoo News or Google News, it's real big right now to talk about what happened on Game of Thrones last night. Game of Thrones, Game of Thrones. Game of Thrones is absolutely pornographic. And I just can't imagine 20 years ago people getting on Facebook and talking about how much they are enthralled with this absolutely pornographic show. And I even saw, this was about, I don't know, I want to say 3 to 4 years ago now, a Game of Thrones themed youth camp in Florida. You know, churches always rip off the world. Like, you have a t-shirt, it doesn't say Gold's Gym, it says God's Gym. And, you know, you don't have a Coca-Cola t-shirt that says the real thing and it has Coke. It's like the true thing and it's got Jesus on it. You know, you've seen these rip-off things before. And what were churches doing? Let's rip off Game of Thrones. Like, why in the world would Christian kids be watching Game of Thrones? So it's going to be interesting to watch with these seeker-sensitive churches how far they'll let their worldly kids push the envelope before they say, no, you can't do that here. And I hate to say it's a good thing. It's a bad thing for society to be more sexually liberal and more liberal with alcohol. But eventually, the culture is going to get so sinful where it doesn't even pretend to respect Christian mores, where the seeker-sensitive model just won't work. Or at least it won't work, and a church can remain moral in and of itself. And personally, I think it's going to be great when the seeker-sensitive model crumbles, because it'll just be the kids who want to be there. You're going to have less false converts, less aisle walkers who think because they said a prayer when they're 17 and walked an aisle that they can go, you know, live it up and party when they go to college. It's not going to be that way, I hope. But here's the real disaster. Your population of youth ministers out there, okay? Who is actually doing the work of youth ministry? Not a hard question. Youth ministers. And these guys don't necessarily specialize in proclaiming the scriptures, preaching and teaching the Bible. Now, more likely, they specialize in recreation and how to have fun, and then they're not necessarily the greatest Bible teachers. They're event coordinators and event planners. So what you have in youth ministry is a population, a workforce, if you will. And by the way, there's no such thing in the Bible as youth ministers, so who cares? You have a workforce of youth ministers who know how to put on fun events. I'm a youth minister. It's my job to put on a fun event and to get as many people as I can to come, especially cool kids, because they'll make other kids come. And I'll get them in the door. We'll do whatever fun thing for 50 minutes, and then we'll make a gospel presentation. If we can make them scared of hell, we'll get a lot of decisions. All right. But the expectation for what fun is moving so far to the left that what the church can morally provide is not going to be there. So you're going to have a bunch of event planners with no events to plan. And if everything goes well, It'll put those youth ministers and that whole culture out of business. And if your church is the type of church who thinks, we're going to do youth ministry and make it pure seeker-sensitive evangelism and revivalism and make it about fun events, you need to think about how wicked the world is and how today's contemporary teenagers are going to be less and less impressed by your rafting trip and ski trip where they can't, you know, drink afterwards or make out with their girlfriend after Bible study on the porch. You need to think about that. Are you equipped for when that time comes? Thanks for listening to The Christian Commute. We'll cut it off right here. Lord willing, I will be back tomorrow. Don't know when I'm going to upload this show because I'm about to go to my parents' house for my mom's birthday. But thanks for listening, guys, and God bless.